There's a real art to giving good customer service. We expect it of many businesses, and those businesses expect their workers to deliver it. And that can have an impact on those workers. Researchers at Penn State University and the University at Buffalo studied the drinking habits of people who routinely work with the public. And there's evidence from the research that enforced service with a smile is connected with workers who drink more heavily after work. Alicia Grandy is a professor of psychology at Penn State University and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Welcome.
Hi.
This is a really interesting area of research. How did you get started on this?
Well, actually, I started out working in service in Oregon. I grew up in Oregon in the Gresham area and started out working in a retail store and a restaurant, and then ended up working in a Starbucks in Portland area.
So you know service with a smile. You've delivered it.
I've lived it, yeah. And at the same time, I was reading this great book by Arlie Hochschild, who coined the term emotional labor, and I kind of put it all together and realized this is something I really want to study and know more about. I wanted to understand my own experience, and I saw the cost it was having on other people around me as well.
So you certainly had some insight into this, but this is not the kind of thing you can just go down to the coffee shop to get your data on. How did you go to compile the numbers you need for the research?
Well, that was thanks to Michael Frohn, who works with NIH and got funding to do this massive national representative survey of U.S. workers. So we had we worked together on that data set and looked at these associations. So people were interviewed by phone and reported the amount that they worked with the customers and the amount that they drank. And I was particularly interested in the amount that they faked their emotions. That's a big part of that service with a smile, is how much do you have to paste on that smile versus it being kind of natural to you, or suppress negative feelings. And that was really the key of what explained why people were drinking more.
So which appears to be the harder part of that, the faking emotions or not showing the ones that you actually have?
Well, we did a composite, so it's a combination of how much are you faking or amplifying your emotions, the positive emotions, and suppressing the negative ones altogether. And the more that people reported having to do that as part of their work role, the more likely they were to report drinking after work and drinking quite heavily after work.
Was it a pretty straight correlation, did it appear? I mean, as the service with a smile enforcements rose, did the drinking rise too?
Yeah, the more a positive association. So the more that they reported the faking, the more that they reported drinking. Now, we did find that varied for some groups. So the relationship was stronger and weaker for certain groups of people.
So which groups was it stronger for? Which groups weaker?
Yeah, so people who tend to be more impulsive. So part of what we were arguing is that it takes some amount of self-control effort to put on that smile. And anyone who's worked at customer service knows that feeling of having to, like, really rally yourself to put on that smile for certain customers. So the idea is that people who maybe lack some self-control as a personal tendency have a harder time with it. And then they lose that self-control when they go home and are faced with an open bottle of wine or an offer to go out for a drink. So more impulsive people had a stronger association than less impulsive people. We also found that was the case for people who worked in jobs where they have less personal self-control. So where they're kind of told what to do, they maybe have a very explicit script that says act this way. Those people also showed a stronger association. The more they had to put on that smile and practice that kind of self-control, the less that they had self-control over drinking later.
So as I cross-reference some of these things in my own head, thinking about people who have to deliver service with a smile and are more impulsive, it sounds like we're talking younger people. Does it tend to skew that way in age?
Yeah. In our sample, we did find that people who were younger also drank more. There was a correlation. And we took that into account. So these are effects beyond age. But I did also find that there was more drinking among those who worked in kind of more entry-level jobs, so people who worked with customers rather than clients, for example.
Because with clients you have a more regular relationship or something?
Correct, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, so people, and usually with clients or ongoing relationships like patients or students, it's jobs where you have to have more training and education, and thus you tend to be a little older as well.
Alicia Grandy's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an Oregon native, it sounds like, and a professor of psychology at Penn State University, talking about a study that was done with researchers at the University at Buffalo about service with a smile and how providing it can lead to more drinking after work. 800-838-3760, if you'd like to throw your 2 cents worth into this discussion. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. Did a big portion of the respondents report being urged to smile at work? Was it that explicit, or was it a little more just like, be pleasant?
Yeah, that's an important distinction. We did actually look at their occupational titles and then contrasted that with another data set that shows to what extent people are required to put on these expressions. And pretty much if you work with the public, you have these expectations. So it is an enforced and highly expected part of the work role. There are some exceptions, like some jobs, like, say, police work or maybe being a correctional officer, you might need to show more negative emotions, but those are fairly rare. So the majority tend to be these positive service with a smile expectations.
It seems like there's a lot of room for nuance and shades here, Alicia. I mean, I wonder how you find degrees, like the difference between smiling until it hurts and just being generally pleasant.
Yeah. I mean, this it is what the way we asked it was explicitly you're having to fake friendliness and compassion towards others. We're not asking about just are you respectful and courteous. That would be a basic interpersonal expectation, not so much an emotional labor expectation.
Okay, so it isn't just you know be a good human being.
It's, no, it's beyond right, that. Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm tending to focus on food service people, and were they generally aware that they can probably get better tips if they do smile?
Yeah, that wasn't part of this particular study, but I do have other research demonstrating that association. Interestingly, the more that people fake. The amount of tips that they make depends on, again, their natural tendencies. So we know that extroverts are a little bit better at faking it in a way that seems real. They're better actors. They have more practice. And so extroverts actually can fake it and make more money, whereas introverts, they actually saw a loss in the tips by using surface acting.
Oh, really? That's interesting. So if it looks like a fake smile, somebody's going to go, not want to give you a tip?
Yeah, people, we vary in how well we can actually discern it, and of course, service providers differ in how well they can give it. But when we do perceive that someone is kind of is faking it, it feels deceptive and maybe a little manipulative, and so sometimes we don't respond positively to that.
I think you mentioned this was other research, but in this research that we're talking about here, did you screen for extroverts versus introverts?
We didn't do that, although impulsivity is somewhat related, and we also did control for neuroticism. So people who tend to feel more negatively also tend to have to fake it more, not surprisingly. So we took that personality tendency into account.
Okay. I was just curious to see if extroverts were going to drive themselves to drinking as much as the introverts do, but that's not part of it, the research, it sounds like.
Correct.
So, I'm tending to focus on food service people. You did also look at people in teaching and nursing, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And how different were the circumstances for people in those lines of work?
Yeah, so they actually have higher emotional demands. We did ask about the perception of how much interpersonal difficulty that they faced or highly emotional interactions. So people in these ongoing relationships, again, not surprisingly with patients or students, they do have more emotional interactions. But that didn't necessarily translate into more drinking. So it wasn't the stressful nature of the work itself that was related to the heavy drinking. It was the faking itself in response to those demands that was related to drinking. And we found less drinking among that group on average compared to those who work with like food services that work in with strangers.
Okay, so here again, it's a client-based thing. If you have people you're working with on a regular basis or students in a classroom, it's a little less taxing, it sounds like, to put on something?
Yeah, well, again, it's more taxing in that there's higher emotional demands, but perhaps there's more motivation to maybe practice that self-control, to engage in more less faking. We do find that there's less of that surface acting or faking it on the surface. And they might use other strategies like kind of taking the other person's perspective or thinking about the good aspects of their work and the good that they're doing in that context. And that can really help buffer the stress that's felt and perhaps then the drinking that's done after work.
You worked in retail yourself, you mentioned, and food service as well. So, I mean, how do you remember what it was like to have to put those faces on yourself? And I mean, after a while, did it feel like it was a natural thing, or was it just sort of something you did unconsciously?
Yeah, I do remember coming home at the end of the day and my face hurting. You know, my smile muscles were sore. And I'm a pretty extroverted person, and I like people, and, you know, it wasn't a taxing thing necessarily on the surface, but after a day of doing it, you know, 6 to 8 hours straight, you do feel exhausted. It takes a lot of attention, some amount of effort, regardless of your personality. Now, I was underage, so of course I wasn't going out and binge drinking, but I did observe a drinking culture, particularly in the restaurant setting in which I worked.
So is that kind of I need a drink after this day of work just a little more natural in certain professions?
Yeah, I do think that's true, and there is research showing that there are drinking cultures, and certainly in hotels and restaurant industries, there's just more availability. The alcohol is right there on the premises. But there's other places where people have a happy hour culture, you know, even in white-collar professional settings, that can also be the case. So it's not limited to just the food services.
So in addition to the data, these were phone interviews. Did you get verbatims from people too, particular quotes about the things they said, about how they felt once the workday was done and whether they did or did not need a drink and what they felt contributed to that feeling?
You know, we didn't. That would be really interesting, though. I'll tell you, the media response to this email suggests that it does resonate with people, and I've heard a lot of people saying that they definitely feel that way. In fact, I was just at a Starbucks and was talking to the people, watched a difficult interaction they'd had with a customer, and I asked them, and they said something about the study, and they were like, oh, yeah. And they looked at each other, like, very knowingly, like, maybe they had just done it the night before.
Huh, okay, so some resonance for sure.
Yeah.
We were talking to Alicia Grandy, a professor of psychology at Penn State University, about people forcing a smile for customers and how it seems that, in some cases, that leads to people drinking more after work. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Tony in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I can't help but think this is a spoof and that you're really doing something in the hopes that you'll get a mention in the Ig Nobel Peace Awards. Because what is the utility of such stuff? It doesn't sound very scientific to me. And forcing people to smile is a bad thing. I mean, what's the point? There's too much money in universities if they can afford to spend stuff on research like this, which is absolutely no use to anybody.
Let's find out. Thanks for the call, Tony. Appreciate it. So what use is this, Alicia, and where did the funding come from?
So the funding was actually for a broader national survey of work stress, which definitely has a lot of use since it's extremely costly to society to cope with the health insurance costs and absenteeism associated with stress. And then examining all the different ways that stress either emerges, so causes of the stress, or behavioral outcomes of the stress, of which drinking and substance use would be one. So the grant funding was a broader interview of a variety of different things. And then I specifically study emotional labor, and Michael Frohn is particularly interested in substance use. And so we combine those to try to understand one source of work stress and one type of behavioral outcome that is very costly to society at large.
So how might employers approach what you've come up with here and get the customer service results they seek while not driving their employees to drink, perhaps?
Yeah, well, those factors that I mentioned before, one thing that I mentioned was about having more autonomy or choice in one's behavior versus being controlled and told exactly what to do. So when we feel like we have more personal self-control, the emotional labor isn't as taxing, and that seems to suggest that could help reduce the likelihood of drinking as well. But I will say that, you know, this isn't a correlational study, so we don't know necessarily about causality. It could be that it's a reverse effect. There's a lot of other things that could be going on. So we do have another study. One of the co-authors on this paper, Gordon Sayer, has done a follow-up, and he's examined other ways that we can manage our emotions at work. And there we find that when workers do more of that reappraisal or thinking, taking the other person's perspective, those kinds of deeper types of emotion regulation, that they're less likely to drink at the end of the day. So that suggests that there's a coping tactic that maybe we can better train workers rather than just demanding the smile on the face.
Were the results you expected the results you got?
I thought there would be an association because of that self-control idea. So there is a broader theory about the taxing and effortful nature of self-control, and we know that putting on a smile when we don't feel that way can be quite effortful. So drinking and constraining one's drinking behavior can also take some amount of self-control when it's kind of a common cultural phenomenon to go out for happy hours and so on. So for that reason, we were predicting that there would be an association between the two. But we also did explore some of the relationships and explored some additional things that we didn't predict, such as these occupational differences that I mentioned.
In general, would you say the basic finding is that there's a certain level of stress to be had from being somebody other than yourself or the way you would generally tend to present a face to the world?
Yeah, that's kind of a general theme in the research that I've done. And I will say that that might be a cultural phenomenon as well. I noticed the last caller had a British accent. And I think that there are differences in terms of the importance that we place on that service with a smile, as well as the importance we place on our feelings of authenticity and the need to feel like we're expressing our inner feelings. So we seem to find in U.S. society that that is something that is onerous to people and distressing and takes a lot of effort. And that might be specific to our society.
Okay, we have about 2 minutes left. I want to take a call from Jamie in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Alicia Grandy.
Well, I'm listening to this is an interesting topic for me. Now, I can't say that it correlates at all with the drinking aspect, because most of my friends that drank would have drunk either way. But I just clocked out and went home afterwards. But two jobs. One of them is if you're employed by Disneyland for the summer and you've got to wear one of those costumes, you are doing it for the kids, you know, and at the beginning of summer, or if it's your first summer doing it, and it's so effortless. You know, you love smiling and dancing with them and playing with them. But say it's your third summer, or it's the end of the summer, it's September.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty fake, but this is the added stress of this job is you can never, you could snap maybe once in a while at an adult, but not a kid. You have that added stress of you've got to come through every day with that smile.
All right, Jamie, thanks. I need to move on because we're almost out of time here. I want to get some response from Alicia. Just talk about what do you do with that and where do you take the research from here?
Yeah, Disneyland is such a great example. And in fact, we in the U.S. are considered having the Mickey Mouse culture because of this need for that, putting on the smile like we're in Disneyland in any job that you're in the service context. But we didn't look at whether being in the job for longer makes it worse. I think that's a really interesting idea, something to look at in the future.
Okay, much more research to come, obviously. Alicia Grandy, researcher at Penn State University, professor of psychology, originally from Oregon. Thanks for sharing your personal story and the results of your research with us.